the headlines. An association of Lebanon's Muslim scholars rejects normalization with Israel under any conditions, saying Israel is the enemy of Lebanon. New information reveals that an Israel-linked spy team busted by Iranian security forces was planning to sabotage a sensitive facility in the city of Isfahan. And Russian foreign minister denies that his country is responsible for the current global food crisis, saying Western sanctions on Russia exacerbated the global food supply. Hello and welcome to World News. Thank you for joining us. A Lebanese group consisting of senior religious figures has condemned any move to normalize relations with the Israeli regime. In a statement, the Beirut Muslim Scholars Association dismissed as unjustifiable any ties with Tel Aviv under the pretext of humanitarian corridor or any other title. It reiterated that there is, quote, no humanitarian or religious corridor between Lebanon and the occupying regime of Israel. The statement also read that Tel Aviv is an enemy of Lebanon and that some are trying to overthrow the government in order to set the stage for normalizing the ties with Israel. The association made it clear that normalization with the enemy will not take place under any circumstances. Several journalists, writers, politicians and activists gathered in the Lebanese southern town of Nagura, where they voiced their support for the Lebanese negotiating team in the maritime dispute with the Israeli regime.
A gathering of Lebanese journalists and activists was held in the South Lebanon town of Naqoura to protest against Israel's extraction activities in the disputed waters.
We are so powerful, we can fight, we can go to war in case the enemy wants a war, unless we get our rights and our wealth in the sea and on the land.
Former head of the Lebanese negotiating team told Press TV that any negotiator should use all sources of power in his hands to strengthen their position facing the other party.
One of the strongest points is the resistance and the position of the resistance in the negotiation or for asking for getting what is right for Lebanon.
The speakers believe that Israeli attempts to drill in disputed waters could escalate the current status quo.
The Lebanese community and the media community is behind the Lebanese negotiation and behind the Lebanese resistance to confirm our right and in our wealth.
Within the presence of the resistance as well as the army of Lebanon and the people who refuse such aggression, because we believe that this act is already an aggression against Lebanon, and we have all the right to give a response to it, whether it is a legal response or any form diplomatic or political or any form of response within our power of nation.
We came here, Lebanese government and people and press, to make the line and the point that this is our land and this is our sea and this is our sky.
Israeli caretaker Minister Yair Lapid has told U.S. Envoy Amos Hochstein that he wants to make a deal with Lebanon over the disputed waters as soon as possible. This comes a week after Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah said the resistance is ready for military escalation if Western pressure to prevent Lebanon from extracting its resources continues. Hochstein is expected in Beirut later in July.
We are here in Naqoura, the last Lebanese town on Lebanon's south coast. From here, at least three lines have been drawn in efforts to demarcate the maritime borders, all of which remain disputed. Behind me are blocks 10 and 9, both potentially rich in gas and petrol. But Lebanon's president, Michel Aoun, says Western pressure has hampered extraction activities. Mariam Saleh, Naqoura, South Lebanon.
Israeli forces have killed at least two Palestinians and injured 19 others during a military operation in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. Resistance groups say the ongoing confrontations in the occupied West Bank prove that the Palestinian uprising will not stop until the end of the Israeli occupation. Mona Kander reports from Ramallah.
Thousands of Palestinians took part in funeral processions of Mohammed Azizi, 25, and Abdurrahman Subh, 28, who were killed early Sunday during an Israeli military raid in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus and its old town. The Fatah Armed Wing Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade says the two Palestinians were its members, while the Israeli military says the operation in Nablus was launched to apprehend armed suspects. Following the raid, a general strike called across Nablus to mourn the death of the two Palestinians.
The operation this time was more violent than the previous ones. Clashes were heavy as Israeli soldiers raided the neighborhood from all sides. Live ammunitions and rockets were fired towards the houses. I believe such ammunitions are only used in wars between countries.
Israeli forces raided Al-Yasamin neighborhood and surrounded a house, which the regime said Palestinian fighters had barricaded themselves in. Eyewitnesses described the raid as a full-blown military invasion, while the Palestinian Red Crescent reported 19 injuries, including 10 people hit by live fire. The Palestinian leadership has condemned the operation, with a spokesman of the Palestinian president saying the Israeli crime will not defeat the Palestinians and will not break their will.
It's a barbaric act. It's another crime committed by the Israeli forces. They fired rockets at a house and they knew people were inside it. Two young men were killed and many others were wounded. It's obvious that the entire region will remain in a circle of violence until the occupation ends.
At least 52 Palestinians have been killed since late March, as Israel has intensified its aggression after a wave of deadly anti-Israel operations that led to the killing of Israeli soldiers. The Israeli military has never stopped its raids in the occupied West Bank. Such operations have often led to the death and injury of Palestinians, like what happened in Nablus. Regardless of how many people are killed or injured in the raids, Palestinians say resistance is their only option until they free the occupied territories. Mona Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
On the same subject, Mick Napier with the Scottish Palestinian Solidarity Campaign says Israel's Western allies have given the regime a free hand to kill Palestinians. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli killing rate in the first, so far during 2022 is five times what it was in the same period last year. The Israelis, have waves of killing, waves of mass incarceration. They have different types of pressure to try to drive Palestinians out of Palestine, but it comes in waves. And at the moment, there is a peak in the rate of killing. I saw, by the way, just to give a sense of proportion, that in the months of the Ukraine war, the government there has claimed how barbaric the Russians are by saying that 243 Ukrainian children have been killed in the five months, I think, of this war. Israel killed twice as many in the same number of weeks, pretty much, during the last invasion of Gaza. Twice as many. So Israel gets a license to kill, which is not extended to very many other groups. Yes, Western governments know exactly what's going on. During the killing, they often give Israel a green light, talking about how reserved and how moderate Israel is under pressure from these extremist Palestinians. After the killing, there are investigations by Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, the United Nations, etc., etc. And they always conclude that Israel is guilty of indiscriminate killing of Palestinians.
A day after the arrest of a spy network in Iran, the Islamic Republic has released new details about the group, which it says was linked to the Israeli spy agency, Mossad. A source close to Iran's Supreme National Security Council says the team had planned terrorist and sabotage operations in several sensitive locations, including a center in Isfahan. The source says the network's elements had received training for months in an African country and entered Iran through Iraq's Kurdistan region. They possessed advanced equipment and powerful explosives. Iranian intelligence ministry says the team had placed their explosives in their targeted area and was arrested hours before completing their terrorist operation. Ukraine says it will retake the southern region of Kherson, which fell to Russian troops shortly after the war between the two countries broke out in February. A Ukrainian official said Kherson is likely to be liberated by September and that all Russian plans are doomed to failure. The same official claimed that Ukrainian forces have been gaining ground as they are switching from defensive to counteroffensive actions. He said Ukrainian strikes on two key bridges in the region, as well as attacks on Russian armed depots and command posts, were part of the preparatory work for a ground offensive. Russian forces seized the region's main city, also called Kherson, on March the 3rd. It was the first major city to fall after Russia launched its military operation in Ukraine. The region lies next to the Crimean Peninsula, which rejoined Russia in 2014. The Foreign Ministry of Russia wards off criticism that Moscow is responsible for the current global food crisis, saying the crisis already existed before the Ukraine war.
If anybody wants to be objective, they could read statistics from the World Food Program, from the Food and Agriculture Organization, which describes the difficulties in the food market beginning with the coronavirus pandemic, when some contacts and supply chains were affected. Then the Americans and Europeans started printing money by trillions of dollars and euros, and using this money to buy food and medicines and other stuff.
Lavrov also denounced Western sanctions on Russia, saying those measures have exacerbated global food supply. He said Russian ships are banned from sending grain and other food to Mediterranean ports. Lavrov was addressing the Arab League on a visit to Egypt. The top Russian diplomat is on an African tour, which says they rely on grain imports from Russia. Lavrov reassured the Egyptian government that their orders for Russian grain would be met at the earliest. The visit comes after Russia and Ukraine signed a deal on Friday that would allow Kiev to resume its Black Sea grain exports. After Egypt, Lavrov is scheduled to visit Uganda, Ethiopia and the Congo. The European Central Bank steps in uncharted territory in the face of runaway inflation that used to be seen when the euro didn't exist. Hashtag trending is next with the social users' reactions to the story.
Hello everyone and welcome to another Hashtag Trending with me, Ali Reza. The economic outlook for the 19-member Eurozone is weakening and it's causing the policymakers a headache. And now for the first time since 2011, the European Central Bank has risen interest rates to tackle runaway inflation. In a surprise move, the ECB pushed its base rate up by 0.5 percentage points after economists expected a smaller 0.25 point rise. The bank says the increase was necessary after a surge in food and fuel prices that show no signs of easing in the next few months at least. Recession concerns, on the other hand, have helped push the euro to a 20-year low against the dollar, which adds to the ECB's inflation-fighting tax by worsening the already high energy prices. Now, this is while many believe that with the chaotic situation in Italy and the ongoing war in Ukraine, the ECB policies are doomed to failure. Our first tweet of the day comes from ProShare. Global economy. For the first time in 11 years, ECB on Thursday raised its benchmark deposit rate by 50 basis points to 0%. The EU's record high inflation, 8.6% in June, forced the ECB to end its 8-year experiment with negative interest rates. Prudent Harry has our next tweet. We are becoming increasingly more aware of the ECB, their failed policies over the last decade, and Thursday's power grab. Inflation hasn't peaked. The Italy situation is now back in play, and the Ukraine mess isn't going very well for the EU governments. The mood over here is very foul. Alastair MacLeod said the ECB's deposit rate rise to zero was no more than an attempt to stabilize the euro, but the ECB is still hooked on monetary inflation, promising to print unlimited credit to support the PIGS, which is an acronym that refers to the economy of southern European states. It won't save the euro and the euro system. Enron bag holder has our next tweet. We have 17.2% inflation and 7% interest rates here in the Czech Republic, and I am still glad we don't have euro here. The ECB is a joke, and Lagarde is too busy buying Hermes bags instead of doing something. Social media users seem doubtful about the ECB policies as they see policymakers walking a fine line between easing price pressures and drawing the European economy into a recession. Analysts are questioning how high the bank can raise rates before the economic outlook deteriorates too much and the bank has to stop. Let's move on to our next batch of comments. Alex Balfour said, I will be proven wrong if A, EU puts through a full fiscal union, B, inflation abates later this year, C, unemployment in EU falls, D, there is no geopolitical issue, E, ECB and EU banks fully recapitalize. I'm convinced not one of these will happen, hence my pessimism. Evelyn Omar Nuffer said, if most of the causes of inflation are global and outside the eurozone, it is doubtful whether interest rate hikes of the ECB will reduce inflation to 2%. It can help to counter investments without a sustainable future. Throw me apples has our next tweet. Europe, quote, Europe has a serious import inflation problem. Controlling the devaluation of the euro against the dollar is essential. It should be an absolute priority of the ECB, end quote. It was exploding even before they poked the Russian mama bear. Euro can have devastating consequences. Jordi Alexander said, Europe is in turmoil with the incompetent ECB in a spot where all it can do is bluff that things are under control and pray. Entering recession by winter and with Italy inching closer each cycle to self-immolating, facing plus 8% inflation, the Italian bond bluff will get called. Concern is growing that the bloc will enter a recession, especially if Russian natural gas supplies are cut off. Some say that an economic downturn is certainly ahead, and the question is more about the extent of that downturn. And that's a wrap for another Hashtag Trending. Take care and bye-bye.
Well, those were the top stories this hour. Thanks for choosing us.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The clear message here is that the Israeli regime may target Palestinian children as it pleases, as there will be no legal, political, or moral accountability for its actions, says Ramzi Baru, journalist, in an article published under the heading, The UN is Failing Palestinian Victims. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. We regret we failed to protect you. This was part of a statement issued by United Nations human rights experts on July 14th urging the Zionist regime to release Palestinian prisoner Ahmad Manasra, only 13 years old at the time of his arrest and torture by Israeli regime forces. Manasra is now 20 years old. His case is a representation of the Zionist regime's overall inhumane treatment of Palestinian children. The expert's statement was forceful and heartfelt. It accused the Zionist regime of depriving young Manasra of his childhood, family environment, protection, and all the rights he should have been guaranteed as a child. It referred to the case as hunting, considering Manasra's deteriorating mental conditions. The statement went further, declaring that this case is a stain on all of us as part of the international human rights community. Condemning the Zionist regime for its ill-treatment of Palestinian children, whether those under siege in war-stricken Gaza or under military occupation and apartheid in the rest of the occupied territories in the West Bank and East Al-Quds, is commonplace. Yet somehow the Zionist regime was still spared a spot on the unflattering list issued annually by the United Nations Secretary General, naming and shaming governments and groups that commit grave violations against children and minors anywhere in the world. Oddly, the report does recognize the Zionist regime's horrific record of violating children's rights in Palestine. It details some of these violations, which UN workers have directly verified. This includes 2,934 grave violations against 1,208 Palestinian children in the year 2021 alone. However, the report equates between the Zionist regime's record, one of the most dismal in the world, and that of other parts of the world. Though the deliberate harming of a single child is regrettable regardless of the circumstances or the perpetrator, it is mind-boggling that the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres found it appropriate to equate the systematic violations carried out by the Zionist regime's military as a matter of course and the violations in other parts of the world. Worse, Guterres' report went further to reassure the Israelis that they are on the right track by stating that so far this year we have not witnessed a similar number of violations, as if to suggest that the right-wing Israeli cabinet of Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid has purposely changed its policies regarding the targeting of Palestinian children. Of course, there is no evidence of this whatsoever. On June 27th, Defense for Children International Palestine, DCIP, reported that the Zionist regime had been intensifying its aggression against children in the West Bank and East Al-Quds since the beginning of 2022. DCIP confirmed that as many as 15 Palestinian children were killed by Israeli regime forces in the first 6 months of 2022, almost the same killed in other regions in the previous years. This number includes 5 children in the occupied city of Jenin alone. The Zionist regime even targeted journalists who attempt to report on these violations, including Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Aghaleh, who was killed on May 11th, and Ali Samoudi, who was shot in the back on the very same day. Much more can be said, of course, about the besiegement of hundreds of thousands of Palestinian children in the Gaza Strip, known as the world's largest open-air prison, and many more in the occupied West Bank. The lack of basic human rights, including life-saving medicine and, in the case of Gaza, clean water, hardly suggests any measurable improvement in the Zionist regime's track record as far as Palestinian children's rights are concerned. If you think that the UN report is a step in the right direction, think again. 2014 was one of the most tragic years for Palestinian children where, according to a previous UN report, 557 children were killed and 4,249 were injured, the vast majority of whom were targeted during the Israeli regime war on Gaza. Human Rights Watch stated that the number of killed Palestinians was the third highest in the world that year. Still, Israeli regime was not blacklisted on the UN list of shame. The clear message here is that the Israeli regime may target Palestinian children as it pleases, as there will be no legal, political, or moral accountability for its actions. This is not what Palestinians are expecting from the United Nations, an organization that supposedly exists to end armed conflicts and bring peace and security for all. For now, the message emanating from the world's largest international institution to Menasra and the rest of Palestine's children will remain unchanged. We regret we failed to protect you.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is Viewpoints. You are listening to analysis on the most important events taking place in the Islamic calendar. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani and Sayyid Alavi. Sayyid Alavi, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to
you. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. My salams to you and the dear audience. Thank you for having me here.
You're welcome. And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you very much.
A very fascinating and controversial topic for today's discussion, and that is plastic surgery or aesthetic surgery, whether it is allowed in the religion of Islam or not. Sheikh Rouhani, let's start with you as a sheikh. What's your opinion on this specific point?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, I should not share here my own opinion. Okay. I should refer to the ulama, the maraja.
As a representative of maraja,
yeah, or followers of maraja. According to the maraja, it is itself, by itself, there is no problem. You know, okay. I mean, plastic surgery itself is allowed. Mm-hmm. So if it leads to some sins, mm-hmm, or gunah or ma'asiyah,
okay,
then, of course, in that case, as a secondary kind of issue, it would become haram and forbidden.
Okay.
For example, let me give you this example. For example, if a lady, mm-hmm, refers to a doctor and reveals, for example, his body to the doctor.
Okay.
So since that doctor is not, is, what is that, stranger or not mahram, we can say.
Okay.
He's not mahram. So in this case, this kind of surgery is haram.
It's forbidden. Haram.
Yeah. Okay. It's prohibited. But if not, if, for example, a woman wants to beautify herself, okay, for his for her husband,
okay,
so, and he refers, for example, some women doctor,
okay,
and do this,
okay,
and there's no problem with that.
So the problem is with the philosophy of the beautification of the body. Mm-hmm. Is it at all, we can't say, how can I say, preferable to beautify yourself, I mean your body, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created you? He knows the best about his creation, isn't it? So he has the absolute knowledge. He's the omnipotent. He has the power. So he created you with this shape and physicality. Why doing cosmetic surgery? To make yourself more beautiful?
Yeah, when it comes to the let's say, the process of the creation, you, uh-huh, see, when something happens in nature, yeah,
okay,
and it happens in its own natural way.
Okay.
So you are there, your parents are there, what do you eat, yeah, the foods are,
okay,
there, the surroundings are there,
that's
environments,
why,
are there. Different things have their own roles in the creation of a person. So sometimes something may go wrong.
I'm not satisfied, for example, with my nose.
See?
Is this going wrong?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. Because in nature, it happens. You know,
when we say, and now we are not talking about, for example, 10% specific points. For example, the children that are formed with, for example, deformity or defects, they need reconstructive surgery or something like that. Okay, we are okay about that. But what about the philosophy of creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? According to religion, because you are the representative of a religion over here in our studio, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created you with this body, your parents too. And your parents did not have the chance of doing the surgery because this is a modern invention, isn't it? A modern innovation of doing a surgery. Okay, if you got a defect in your breathing, your nose impairments or body impairment, okay, you are allowed to do that. Also Islam. But what about, for example, the cases that are necessary? Isn't it israf of the money, israf of the waqt? You as the ashrafa makhlugat, the best creatures of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, were born in order to do surgery or cosmetic surgery?
You know, let me tell you that, of course, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the most, let's say, beneficent, the most merciful, yeah? Gracious to the mankind.
Yes, for sure.
And of course, He absolutely wants to make us, to create us in the most perfect way.
Okay.
There's no doubt about that.
Uh-huh.
But the problem is, as I told you, in this process of the creation, many other things has also their own roles in nature. You see, for example, let me give you this example. Imam Jawad alayhi salatu wassalam.
Okay.
His hair and his face, the form of face, the skin, was a bit different.
Yes.
From Imam Rida alayhi salatu wassalam. I mean, some people doubted that whether he is son of Imam or not. You see, you know the story.
Okay, yes, yes.
So, can we say that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala didn't want to create Imam Jawad alayhi salatu wassalam in the most perfect body? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
But since mother of Imam Jawad was a servant, so of course
the female maid,
the mother was different.
Yeah, okay.
She had a different skin.
Linking to a specific ethnicity.
And she was from Africa.
Yeah, from Sudan, Africa, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, this is the point.
So he had a more colored...
That's it. So now the question is, can we say that Imam Rida was perfect and Imam Jawad was not perfect? No, of course, both of them were perfect. Both of them
very
are perfect,
good.
Yeah?
Now we got to this point. Mm-hmm. What is the meaning of perfection? Okay? So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants the human beings to be perfected.
Mm-hmm.
But does cosmetic surgery necessarily get into perfection meant by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala?
You know, I wanted to add a very, very key point here.
Okay.
That is this, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does everything in this world in its most perfect possible way. We should not forget the possibility.
Okay.
What is possible that would be done by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala?
That's right.
So sometimes the possibility is important. You know, for example, if your mother and father, they are, for example, from Africa.
Yes.
So this possibility of this child is to be like Africans. You see?
100%.
So, of course. Okay. So we should not expect these parents to give birth to a child like, for example, other people. Yeah,
yes.
Whites. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala create us in the most perfect possible way.
Mm-hmm.
Possibility should be there.
Yes.
So that's why sometimes you are free. You are allowed from the Sharia perspective that if you're dissatisfied with your appearance and you commit no sin if you do some surgeries.
Okay.
So Maraja says that you are allowed.
Okay.
Yeah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala allows you.
Yes.
So it is permissible. And you know, what was your question?
Yeah. Can I add some points?
Okay, Sayyid Alavi, let's get to the scene, man. What's your point?
Can I add some points to what our dear Sheikh said?
Yes.
Because I'm with him here.
Okay.
I'm in the same boat with the Sheikh.
Okay.
But your approach was a little bit harsh. And
I'm not against surgery or something like that. I do want to say, cosmetic surgery is a modern innovation.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So during the history of the human beings, it was not tested.
Right.
Or something
but it is
like
it is like saying that I'm against gene modification.
Okay.
Am I against
for gene, the improvement of the body is necessary.
Gene modification in food. Am I against gene modification in urban society and how we build our nature in a city, in a municipality? So I'm against gene modification. Am I or am I not? Because we have it.
Okay. When we build a city or an area of a city, we are touching nature, Mother Nature,
Gene engineering, that's right.
Okay. Or it's like saying, look, Allah has created me perfect, and then after I'm done with my food, why should I take supplements, vitamins, multivitamins, calcium, magnesium, and so on, D vitamins, and so on and so forth.
To live more, huh?
Omega-3, and I'm making a lot of advertisement here. Okay. Why should I take those supplements? What all doctors say, and I don't know about all, but according to my research, it is strongly recommended that after you're done with your food, you take supplements because the body requires that. Not all those supplements are in your food.
Again, Sayed, we are getting into the bodily aspect of this type of surgery. You know, we are still talking about the body.
Right, I just gave those examples to come back to the surgery.
Okay, 100 years from now, the people were not used to getting vitamins or supplements or the pills, and they aged
but
more
that does
than,
not mean that
they
we
aged
should...
more than today's generation.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Okay.
I mean, the age we have today
is much higher than
what our ancestors lived like.
No. Let me give you good examples.
Area in West Asia or the level of age in Europe is much higher now than in the past.
Let me give you...
But when it comes to natural food, it was better in the past.
The natural food and also aging. Let me give you best examples about the ulama, the Shia ulama that lived in Najaf and Qom, okay?
Even today,
because the lifestyle is without supplement, you know, when you go to the lifestyle, you do not see such things. Maybe the meaning of perfection has changed. It is because of the effects of the philosophy of the modern world, isn't it?
Now we're jumping a little bit back and forth. Okay, we need to concentrate a little bit. Now you mentioned the ulama, some of the ulama.
Yes.
You mentioned the maraji. Now we're becoming more and more specific.
Yes.
So it's not everyone.
Okay.
Number one. Number two, they have a specific lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know about the supplements that you mentioned. They might take it today. And they didn't in the past, but they might take it today.
Okay.
But the most important is that it doesn't matter how much supplements I take when I don't have a good lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It won't help you. So we shouldn't focus on one dimension.
Okay.
I just mentioned those dimensions as a whole of a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
The holistic perspective should be taken into consideration.
Okay.
Now, coming back, when we look at the average level of life, people live longer today. Okay, but now going back to surgery.
To the cosmetic surgery, that's right.
Cosmetic surgery. So I'm with the Sheikh here that, yes, Allah creates everything in perfection, but then you have other denominators gathering.
Okay.
And then you becoming produced. And then you have, for example, lines. Now, you mentioned, for example, nose prior to the program. But lines about on your forehead.
What's wrong with the lines?
It's nothing wrong, but can you make yourself prettier like you were when you were 22?
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with doing what we call buttocks? You
cannot laugh.
You inject that liquid. So those lines, for people who have a lot of lines on their forehead, they become... They get the same forehead as when, or almost the same as when they were 22.
Okay.
What's wrong with that? And I'm specifically addressing scholars here, okay? who study a lot. What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong. What about hair plantation, or what do you call it? Hair implants. What's wrong with that? That's a medical thing. What's wrong with that? That's completely all right.
Well,
what about the psychological perspective?
Let me say what's the problem. The problem is...
Yes. Surely.
The problem is that we are shifting our focus from intellect, from spirit to the body.
All right, I'm with you. Why not having both of them? Zahir wal batin. Zahir wal batin. The exterior and the interior.
You know,
the outer and the inner. Why not have both?
Okay.
الأول والآخر.
Brother, listen.
Right.
Listen, shifting the focus from the intellect and spirituality
into
the body is absolutely wrong, according
to
my opinion.
It should be the inner aspect first.
The case is that the bodily and the physical beauty, will overshadow your intellect. Mm-hmm. Even those people who say, for example, are intellectuals or scholars or philosophers, according to my opinion, most of them, they do not do that, even in the Western culture, okay?
Right, right.
They do not do that because right. their value and their value system is very much different.
Right.
But maybe when you got, for example, to the actors, actresses, even right. politicians, including right. Mark today, right. they do that. Why? Because they believe in the face value.
Right.
And not the faith value.
Right.
Okay? F-A-I-T-H.
Right.
Now, which one is more important?
No, face without value doubt. Or faith value? I don't think anyone in the studio, not me and not the, our dear okay. Sheikh, would oppose you mm-hmm. in that okay. aspect. Everyone would say that the inner dimension, the intellectual okay. dimension, is far more important than the
and
outer.
And day by day...
But does that mean that sorry. We should forget the outer?
Sorry, Sheikh.
Yes.
But day by day, it's becoming complicated. It started... At the very beginning with the nose surgery, right. rhinoplasty.
Now you have lips, now you have eyelashes.
Now we have lips, sorry, we have breasts, sorry, we have buttocks. We right. have the private parts, cosmetic surgery, okay?
Right.
So this is the body. Right. As long as you go on, you will start with the body. So today, okay, let's do the liposuction. Tomorrow, right. let's
We shouldn't exaggerate. We should not exaggerate and we should fix our culture.
This is what the bodily value does with you, brother.
We should fix our culture. We should teach our people about the philosophy, okay? The philosophy is very important, yes. very good.
Okay.
But after, and we mentioned the intellectual dimension, very good. But as I said, I mentioned the hair implant, the lines of your forehead, and even psychological dimensions. We live in a society, after all.
What about the psychology?
In a certain age, to when you were a little bit bigger,
okay,
it was seen as attractive.
Okay, that's all right. Okay, thank you much, Sheikh.
Thank you.
And Sayyid Alevi for your presence in the program, okay. talking about the cosmetic surgery and what is the real meaning of beauty. Thank you very much. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong, and a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
A congressional committee has heard former U.S. President Donald Trump pressured his Vice President Mike Pence to overturn the 2020 election, despite having been told repeatedly that doing so would be illegal. We are prepared for you an article written jointly by Patricia Zengerler and Richard Cowan. The piece is titled U.S. House Panel Hears Trump Pressured Pence to Overturn His 2020 Election Defeat. Aides to Mike Pence told the Congressional Committee investigating the 6th of January 2021 protest march on the Capitol, when thousands of people marched against the certification of the November 2020 election, which placed Joe Biden in office as the current U.S. president, former U.S. President Donald Trump pressured his vice president to overturn his 2020 election defeat. According to a Reuters news agency, members of the Democratic-led House of Representatives Select Committee said recently that Trump continued his pressure campaign despite being told repeatedly it was illegal to do so, as Mike Pence and lawmakers met to formally certify Joe Biden's victory. The 9-member Select Committee's public hearings, launched recently, intends to put up a case against Donald Trump that he was responsible for the 6th of January 2021 violence, starting with knowingly spreading lies around the election, seeking to overturn the election results, assembling the mob in the Capitol, and failing to act to stop the violence. The committee is trying to build a case that Trump's efforts to overturn his defeat amounted to illegal conduct, far beyond normal politics. Mike Pence has criticized Trump's earlier complaints about his handling of the 6th of January joint session, which, as a part of the regular legal process of validating presidential elections, was convened to certify the legitimacy of the Electoral College votes of the various states. Donald Trump has repeatedly denied wrongdoing while maintaining that he lost the election only because of widespread fraud that benefited the Democrat Joe Biden. Trump and his supporters denounced the 6th of January panel as a political witch hunt. Trump claimed that he won the 2020 presidential election and that there was massive voter fraud. The former president claimed that he ordered 10,000 National Guard troops to protect the Capitol building. The certification vote on 6th of January 2021 had become a focus for Donald Trump. On 6th of January 2021, Trump supporters occupied the U.S. Capitol while lawmakers were in the process of reviewing the certification of state electors, which indicated Joe Biden's victory. Some Trump supporters had hoped that this process could have resulted in some of the electors being disqualified, thus overturning the outcome of the presidential election. It is claimed by some that the demonstrators were infiltrated and incited by provocateurs from U.S. intelligence agencies who orchestrated the false flag operation in order to get rid of Donald Trump. Some among the crowd clashed with police officers and some made threats to beat up a number of Democratic lawmakers. Some also inflicted damage on parts of the Capitol building. Mark Short, who was Mike Pence's chief of staff, claimed in videotape testimony that Pence told Trump many times that he did not have the authority to stop the vote certification in Congress. Gregory Jacob, an attorney for Mike Pence, said the main proponent of that theory, attorney John Eastman, admitted in front of the president 2 days before the January 6 attack on the Capitol that his plan to have Mike Pence halt the procedure would violate the law. John Eastman had argued that Mike Pence could reject results from certain states if he thought they were illegitimate, giving Republicans in those states an opportunity to declare Donald Trump the victor despite the actual vote count. Advisors to Mike Pence told the committee that the idea had no basis in law. Former U.S. Appeals Court Judge J. Michael Luttig, an informal Mike Pence advisor, said it is breathtaking that these arguments even were conceived, let alone entertained by the President of the United States. Committee members and witnesses warned that Donald Trump, who is widely expected to run for president again in 2024, would not accept defeat no matter the actual outcome. Former U.S. Appeals Court Judge Michael Luttig said, "Today, almost 2 years after a fateful day in January of 2021, that still Donald Trump and his allies and supporters are a clear and present danger to American democracy." The committee showed several chilling clips of some of the thousands of Trump supporters who descended on the Capitol building, chanting for Mike Pence to be pulled out of the building or hanged. Trump tweeted at 24 minutes past 2 in the afternoon local time, while the protest was going on, that Mike Pence did not have the courage to stop the vote count. Sarah Matthews, a Trump White House staffer, said in a video testimony it felt like he was pouring gasoline on the fire by tweeting that. Donald Trump accused Mike Pence of having acted as an automatic conveyor belt for the old crow, Mitch McConnell, to get Biden elected president as quickly as possible. He was referring to the fact that when the proceedings were interrupted for more than 10 hours by the breach of the Capitol, the detailed challenges that many expected would be presented of fraud, ballot stuffing, and violations of Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution in Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin were given short shrift, in deference to what a number of senior congressional officials termed the assault on American democracy, represented by what was already being called, both in Congress and on television, the insurrection. Donald Trump maintains that rather than allowing the proceedings to descend into an emotional morass which prejudiced the outcome and dismissed the many valid issues raised about the election without a proper hearing, Mike Pence should have provided an atmosphere for those many members of both houses who had announced their intention to bring the challengers to do so in a professional and secure environment with confidence that the proceedings would be conducted in a fair and objective manner. Mike Pence answered Donald Trump's criticism by saying that he had no right to overturn the results of the presidential election. Speaking to the Conservative Federalist Society in early February, the former vice president said some Republicans believed that, as the presiding officer over the joint session of Congress, I possess unilateral authority to reject Electoral College votes. And I heard recently President Trump said I had the right to overturn the election. President Trump is wrong. I had no right to overturn the election. Although Trump had used the words overturn the election in a public statement, he was referring to the challenges to the vote counts that many expected would be presented in the half dozen or so swing states referenced earlier. These included a constitutional challenge arising as a consequence of various procedural changes which had been made in the months leading up to the election, and which allowed several million voters to use mail-in ballots for the first time. The joint session, that is, the convening of both houses of Congress in one session, is held on 6th of January following the presidential elections. The House and the Senate jointly convene, and the Electoral College results of each state are presented in the alphabetical order of the names of the individual states for certification by the Vice President, who presides over the proceedings. As the vote counts are presented, the Vice President asks the assembled Congress if there are any objections to the certification of that state's vote. If there are no objections, the certification is presumptively granted. However, if an objection is raised by a member of the House, and if it is joined by a member of the Senate, then the two houses retire to their respective chambers, where the challenge is presented in the form of a trial. If each house sustains the objection, the vote is denied certification and is not counted in the totals. There had been allegations raised in a number of the swing states, including Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, and Nevada, of various types of outright fraud. There was also a claim, a strong one, that for some reason no court had touched the merits of, alleging that recent changes in election practice were done without enabling legislation by the state legislatures, and that therefore the votes that followed from these changes, including a huge and decisive number of newly authorized mail-in ballots, were void, as being in violation of Article 2, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution. That section says, each state shall appoint, in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct, a number of electors. If those challenges prevailed, there were enough votes in enough swing states which fell into the latter category to hand the election to Donald Trump. The first challenge was raised prior to the Capitol breach in the third state to be offered for certification, that is Arizona. This prompted the two houses to retire to their individual chambers to examine the evidence supporting the claims of irregularity that were to be raised. It was when these sessions were convened that the Capitol's security was breached and portions of the building were temporarily occupied. Each of the Senate and the House sessions bore the heavy imprint of the protesters' intrusion, and much of the debate was focused not on the facts and law relevant to the claim, but instead on what was already being termed the insurgency. Upon the return of the joint session, most of the remaining challenges were deferred in favor of a showing of unity against the Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, a day of infamy newly added to a short list that included Pearl Harbor and 9/11, where the temple to democracy was desecrated. Had the challenges in two or three of the six swing states been sustained, the outcome of the election would have been changed in favor of Donald Trump.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.